Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Okay, so our episode starts off today. Sarah Spears is the daughter of Don and Carol Spears. She has an older sister named Amanda, and together they grew up in the country and attended boarding school in Perth, Western Australia. So our case is from Australia this week. So my sisters, Sarah and Amanda, got along very well. Although they were totally opposites in their personalities, they were best friends. Sarah is said to be the type of person who would go out of her way to make sure everyone around her was happy. She was compassionate and could light up a room with her affectionate personality. In 1996, Sarah and Amanda moved to South Perth, where they shared a flat, which is an apartment, but flat makes it feel a little bit cooler. So I'm going to continue calling it a flat. Okay? They are enjoying life together as young adults, and in mid-January 1996, their parents had come down to visit. After a great time together, Don and Carol got back into the car and headed back to their home in the country, not knowing that was the last time either of them would ever see Sarah, their daughter, again. On Friday, January 26, 1996, Sarah and her friends are planning to go to King's Park, where there's an outdoor concert thing happening. They thought they would bring some food, sit down, eat dinner, and enjoy the concert together. After dinner, as day turns into night, Amanda, Sarah's sister, picks up Sarah and her friends and takes them to the Ocean Beach Hotel to drink and hang out. From the sounds of it, this hotel bar is in the middle of a market that is super lively on Friday night. It's a great place to hang out and have fun with your friends. There's a whole bunch of bars and shops around it, so it's just kind of a Friday night place where young adults go to hang out. Around midnight, Amanda drives back to the Ocean Beach Hotel to pick up her sister and her friends once again. So she dropped them off and is now back to pick them up again. The plan was to take them to Claremont, which is like a different city where a popular night stop called Club Bayview was located, and they were going to finish the night there. Before getting out of the car, Sarah hugged and kissed her sister and thanked her for the ride, and then ran into the club with her friends. And again, this new spot in Claremont is also very lively for young adults. Around 2 a.m., Amanda had gone to sleep, and so Sarah decides she will catch a taxi home, instead of having Amanda come pick her up again. So Sarah tells her friends that she's going to head home for the night and runs out to the end of the road to find a phone booth. So her friends stay in the club, and she's done. Before she does, she stops and talks to the club guard, which I'm thinking is the bouncer, and she tells him that she's headed home to see Amanda, and I'm assuming that they are friends because he knows who Amanda is and everything. At 2:06 a.m., Sarah calls Swan Taxis, but instead of ordering the taxi to South Perth, where Amanda is at their home sleeping, she orders her taxi to a suburb called Mosman Park. She had a friend who lives there, whom she had been with earlier that day, and it's assumed that she decided it would be cheaper and faster to go there and crash instead of going all the way home to Amanda's.
We're going to take a quick break from this episode, and I'd like to discuss my sponsor, NordVPN. A service that keeps me confident and secure every time I go online. If you're not familiar, a VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and NordVPN is one of the best out there for keeping your browsing activity under wraps. Why do I use NordVPN? First, it gives me total online privacy. When you connect NordVPN servers, all your internet data is encrypted. That means snoopers, advertisers, and even your internet provider can't see your personal info or track your digital footprints. It's like having an invisible cloak for your online life. Second, NordVPN is awesome for unblocking geo-restricted content. Love streaming sports from overseas or catching up on that show that isn't available in your country yet? Just open NordVPN, pick a server from one of their thousands of locations worldwide, and boom, you'll have access to content you couldn't see before. Plus, with speeds faster than ever, you can stream in high definition without those pesky buffering interruptions. Now let's talk simplicity. NordVPN's app is super user-friendly. Whether you're on a phone, laptop, or tablet, you can connect with just one click. And if you ever get stuck, their customer support is there 24/7. Another big highlight, NordVPN has a no-logs policy, which means that they never track or store your data. your digital world stays yours alone. Lastly, if you travel often like me, NordVPN really comes in handy. Whether you're on public Wi-Fi at airports, hotels, or coffee shops, your data is always at risk. But with NordVPN, you can safeguard your connection and keep hackers at bay. No more worrying about whether your coffee shop Wi-Fi is safe. So if you're serious about protecting your privacy, accessing global content, and just having peace of mind online, NordVPN is the way to go. Give it a try, and I promise you'll wonder why you waited so long. Hit the link in the description to learn more and grab a special deal. Stay safe out there, and happy browsing with NordVPN. Now let's get back to the rest of our episode.
So she's at this club. Basically, she decides to go home. So she gets a taxi to a different place that's not her home. I did think this was a little weird because the bouncer did say she was going home to Amanda, but not even 20 seconds. I don't know how long it was, but just the time it took her to walk from there to the phone booth at the end of the road. She's now going to a different place. But maybe it's one of those things where he knows Amanda, so it's just easier to be like, I'm heading home. Yeah, see ya. Sarah crosses the road and waits for the taxi. She just called at the intersection on Sterling Highway. That's the name of the road. Three guys in a car pull up around that time and notice Sarah standing there alone. As they drive away, they notice a car pulling up where Sarah is standing, but they turn at the intersection and drive away. At 2:09 a.m., Sarah's taxi arrives at the intersection, looks up the road towards the phone booth, down the road the other way, and Sarah is nowhere to be found. She was gone, and is now missing. On the Monday after Sarah Spears went missing, her sister tried calling her after, not seeing her since that Friday night. When Sarah didn't answer, Amanda reached out to her friends, asking if they had seen her or heard from her since she left the club that night. They hadn't either. Amanda decides she's going to call the police. Police immediately begin circulating pictures of Sarah, along with what she was wearing that night. They distinguish her beige, chunky heels that she had been wearing. Search teams scour the nightlife and club areas. Hundreds of people come forward trying to help. Every lead is chased. Nothing helps. Sarah is not found. So basically, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Some random car comes by, and next thing you know, Sarah is gone. So now we're jumping back. In the early 60s, in a suburb called Shenton Park, that was just 10 miles away from Claremont, which is where Sarah went missing from. Trevor and Janie Rimmer have started their life together and eventually have a baby named Jane in 1973. According to Hunt for a Killer, Jane is a quiet child but grows into a fun-loving young woman who wants to work with children one day. As the time comes for her to move out of her parents' house, Jane gets her own flat and fulfills her dream by getting a job at a children's center. 5 months after Sarah Spears was last seen in Claremont, it's now Saturday, June 8th, 1996. 23-year-old Jane Rimmer links up with her friends at none other than the Ocean Beach Hotel. They eat dinner, have some drinks, continue with their night at a club called the Continental. They dance and hang out, but around 11:30 p.m., they decide to walk to another club called Bayview. According to her friend, Jane was reluctant to go to this specific club because she didn't like it. But when the group arrived, they discovered that there was an extremely long line to get in, and they decided instead to call it a night. So these two stories are sounding eerily familiar, and they're only 5 months apart, Jane and Sarah. They both are staying at the same hotel, both went to the same clubs. Yes. Although Jane had not wanted to go to Bayview, she, unlike her friends, was not ready to call it a night. As her friends are getting into the taxi, they try to convince her to leave with them, but she just wants to hang out a bit longer in the nightlife, have a little bit more fun before she ends her night. The next day, when Jane does not show up to a Sunday lunch with her parents, Trevor and Jane visit their daughter's flat, but immediately call police when she isn't there. Once notified, police draw the conclusion that, because only 5 months earlier, Sarah had gone missing from the same area with a near-identical story, that means to them that these cases have to be connected. Where's Jane's friends? They left and never saw her again? Pretty much. Police notify task force that the cases could be worked together by a special task force called Macro. So this special task force is created in order to work just on these cases. These two missing women around the same age, around the same area, same color skin, similar tone, everything, similar lifestyles. Pictures of Jane are posted in hopes, just like Sarah's were, that someone had seen her or something. But once again, nothing solid comes forward. On Saturday, August 3rd, 1996, 55 days after Jane went missing, a family driving around in Wellard stops to pick some wildflowers. During the adventure, the mother of the family stumbles across a body in a grassy wooded area. Jane Rimmer's naked body had been discovered. 9 months after Jane Rimmer's body was discovered, it's now Saturday, March 15th, 1997. 27-year-old Sierra Glennon had been drinking with her colleagues after work. After that, they decided to keep the night going and make their way to the Continental. The Continental is crowded, and Sierra decides to stay for only 20 minutes. She grabs her jacket, makes her way out. While walking down Sterling Highway, a few men are hanging outside when they call out to Sierra about how dangerous it is to hitchhike alone at night. Sierra waves them off and keeps walking, but not too much farther down the road. They notice a car pull up and Sierra begins talking to the driver. The vehicle was light-colored, according to the men, but they weren't paying too much attention. They didn't know her. Next thing they know, Sierra and the vehicle are gone. None of the men ever see her get into the vehicle. As they look down the road a couple minutes later, they notice that she and the vehicle are gone. I personally can't believe this happened 3 times, at least. Probably around the same exact spot. Within like a year or two, 96 and now 97, it's been on the news. They were taking the disappearances seriously, so everyone was like, we probably shouldn't be alone. Which is probably honestly why those guys said, hey, it's dangerous. I'm sure they were trying to be serious. So the next day, Sierra's mom reports her missing when she doesn't hear from her. Panic sets in as the information is spread about the possible serial killer. Because Jane's body was found, a $250,000 reward is set up by the Western Australian government, the largest ever reward in return for any news that leads to an arrest. Okay, there were so many people around the night these girls went missing in the area. In fact, 2 separate groups of men have said that they saw 2 different women near a car, but there's nothing. No information. It's hard because I'm sure a lot of different people saw people next to cars, and it's nighttime. And like, this is such a busy area. I know you said that, but at the same time, it's almost the best. Like, they say hide in plain sight. It was so busy that anyone even noticed a little scream or a little tussle. On April 3rd, 1997, only 19 days after Sierra disappeared, a laborer comes across a body along a sandy track on Perth's northern outskirts. Police confirmed that the partially clothed body was, in fact, Sierra Glennon, and that the killer most likely got off the main road, taking a separate track to get to where the body was dumped. So he went out of his way to get there. There's 2 bodies they've now found, Jane and Sierra. Sierra is still missing. And all of these happened within about a year. It's crazy they're finding these bodies have been found fairly quickly. And Sierra still hasn't. And that's a point in the case that will continue on the whole case. In the time following the killings, Claremont was in a panic, obviously. Weekend nights that used to be bright and busy became deserted. People of Western Australia did all they could to help. Crime Stoppers was overloaded with calls, but nothing seemed to come of it. No one came forward saying they knew anything about the cars that had been witnessed those nights talking to the girls. Cab drivers were all suspects at the beginning, but after taking DNA from thousands of cab drivers, nothing came of it. The next suspect is a man named Lance Williams. The next public suspect, I should say, that is announced is a man named Lance Williams, who has followed around for more than 2 years in the investigation, because in the past, he had been driving around Claremont at night on the weekends, offering women rides home instead of them having to call taxis. So they never really found out why he did that. I'm just thinking maybe be nice or maybe trying to pick up chicks, and I don't know. They didn't even really get into that. And he was never charged and was eventually dismissed. So as we're on the subject, I'm going to say here, this investigation is super private, which is why I don't know why Lance, there's a lot of information not released. Up until just a few years ago, this was a mysterious case. No one knew any information about it. No one. The things that were discovered came out of the blue. Like, it wasn't publicly told, if that makes sense. So despite the special effort for the search of Sarah, Jane, and Sierra's killer, because at this point they're assuming that Sarah also died, they just haven't found a body. 12 years after the terror, nothing had been released. No arrests had been made. Efforts had been long spent on Lance Williams, but now the case was cold. And we have this empty period of time where the public is told nothing about the case. I mean, I guess if there's no camera evidence, if no one saw any license plates or a car, there's no DNA evidence, like, what do you do? The public What do? We haven't been told anything. They said, we found the bodies, right? This is how the bodies were found. I mean, they said they were naked, but that comes out later. So the public doesn't even know how they were found. How they died hasn't been released. All they know is that, hey, these three girls went missing around the same time, in the same area, two of the bodies.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Been found. This guy was a suspect. They spent a long time on the taxi drivers, but now, nothing. And it's not like this case is being forgotten. It's being reported on. I've listened to it on podcasts before anything was solved. I think they were trying to keep everything private so they could find out who did this, or maybe they just weren't sure. It was weird. You don't really see such a public case that was a serial killer for 12 years, not hear much, and not hear anything. So 20 years after that first original victim, Sarah Spears, went missing, the Western Australian police randomly and quite out of the blue make an arrest in this case. In December 2016, the arrest made public's head spin, as the public had no idea they even had another suspect. They held a press conference and announced that 48-year-old Bradley Robert Edwards was being charged with the murder of Sarah Spears in 96, the murder of Jane Rimmer in 96, and the murder of Sierra Glennon in 97. So he was 48, so he would have been 28, or in his 20s. Bradley was a former telephone technician for a company now named Telstra. They were formerly known as Telecom when he worked there. And it's actually a very popular company in Australia. Like outside of there, I've never heard of it. He had driven a company car, which looked like a taxi, and was given a company knife with the Telecom logo on it, which would be brought up later in trial. Bradley denies the charges of murder presented against him, but admits that he did, in fact, rape a 17-year-old girl in a cemetery in 1995, so a year before Sarah went missing. Why would he just admit that out of the blue? Well, they came to him with evidence saying, we know you did this, and also some of his earlier crimes he had actually gone to court for and been punished. And a different woman that he also admits to, where he broke into her house and attempted to rape her in 1988. The question I have is, how is this guy not in jail? So he was a normal guy, steady jobs, had friends, bit of a nerd, worked with a local sports center for kids. 3 years after the arrest of Bradley Roberts, now 51 years old, he was taken to trial. And I need to preface this again. They made the arrest and then gave no evidence or any information to the public about why they suspected him. All of that would have to wait until trial. So this guy gets arrested. Then everyone's like, well, now we'll finally have answers. And then they wait 3 more years. Well, they're probably trying to save it all for trial. And that's not a dumb thing. But keeping in mind, there was no information before this. This just feels super random. And everyone, put yourself back 3 years before this happens and everyone's like, they made an arrest and we have no idea why. We have no idea why they're suspecting this guy. He goes to trial, according to BBC News, the judge-only trial. So he just wanted a judge. And it was Western Australia's longest-running and most expensive murder trial to date. It took place over 7 months and included over 200 witnesses. At trial, since day one, the information everyone had been wanting came spilling out. So all of the answers really came out. So it turns out there had been a ton of DNA evidence in this case that just couldn't be tested back then, that the public had been told about. But as time went on and DNA testing advanced, new detectives came in and took a look at this case and were like, hey, we have new technology that can maybe help us with this DNA. There was a scraping under Sierra Glennon's thumb that had not been tested back then, but when tested, it came back as an unknown male, but also matched an unsolved rape from a cemetery in 95. Okay, and this realization was made back in 2008. So if you think about it, police knew they had a match for an unsolved rape in 2008 and didn't tell anyone. This case was just cold and stagnant, but they had made this huge discovery and just didn't tell the public about it. Pretty crazy that DNA advanced that much, though, that they were able to make that connection through it. So in 2016, so they make this match, but then they're like, well, we still don't know who did this unsolved rape. So it doesn't help us. It just gives us a little bit more evidence because there's another case to look at. So in 2016, after locals heard about the connection to the old attack in 1995, local people start to, you know, they talk to a cop who talked to a cop who told a civilian who told another civilian, and then locals start to say they made a connection in the serial killer case. It was suggested to police that they double-check a break-in that had happened in the 80s and check that against match samples. So people start talking, and they're like, well, since we know he did it before, why don't you check in the attempted rape of a break-in? And I know it's not the same case, but we could at least, and there was DNA in that case, and we could pull evidence against it. The break-in rape DNA was, in fact, a match. So now, in 2016, police have this evidence that not only did he do the three serial killings, he also raped someone in a cemetery, also attempted to rape someone by breaking into their house in the 80s. He would have been young. He would have been, what, 16 to 18? Somewhere around there. Police had now drawn the conclusion, without public knowing, that in 1988, a man broke into a home but was run out. And in 1995, that same man abducted a 17-year-old off the street, drove her to a cemetery where he beat and raped her and left her to die. But she survived. And then, in 1996 through 97, went on to become the Claremont serial killer that everyone knows about. They had his DNA, but they didn't have him. When they run the DNA, there's no match in CODIS, so they're like, great, we now have more cases, but we still don't have the guy. And all this is happening without the public even knowing that they continue to make these conclusions. So as I assume they're basically waiting on this guy, or waiting at this point for that guy's DNA to hit somewhere. They want him to get arrested, him to come, you know, get a DUI, and then his DNA gets something to happen. As they're waiting for this something to happen, they're also going, are there any other cases that we haven't looked at that he could have done? So police found in evidence, when looking back at the 1988 home invasion attempt, that there had been another attempted break-in in the same city that year, and they had originally drawn these two together. Then, after looking, they're like, maybe it was the same guy. This other attempt was a man in a woman's nightie, like a woman's nightgown, which I thought was strange, had opened a sliding glass door to break in. But then they were awake, and so he was scared off. He left four fingerprints on the door in this break-in. And when police run those fingerprints, come back to a man named Bradley Robert Edwards. He was already in the database with his fingerprints, not his DNA. And the reason he was in the database for his fingerprints was because he had attacked a social worker while on a job and gotten arrested for it. He was given probation for that attack. He attacked her, nothing happened. Like, she ran off, he got scared, he ran off. She's like, hey, you attacked me. He gets arrested, he gets put on probation for it, and he keeps his job at telecom. Like, they don't even know he was on the job when he made this attack. They don't fire. They needed to obtain Bradley's DNA, though, to make a positive ID to the Claremont serial killer. Because all they're thinking is, we have these four fingerprints ID'd, and now we have this unknown DNA. We'll run them. Run his DNA, we'll get his DNA somehow, and see if it matches. So they follow him into a movie theater. Undercover cops follow him into a movie theater, and when he gets up to leave the theater, he was drinking a Sprite. He left a Sprite for the cup in the cup holder when he stood up to leave. Grab the straw, literally they're waiting for everyone to clear out. They bag it, they do like protocol and everything. They know they have to be smart about it. They bag it, they take it, and they test the DNA. Bada bing, bada boom. They have their serial killer. It's the same guy. So this comes out at trial. Jane and Sierra's throats have been cut with what they thought was a knife and a sawing motion. So it wasn't like a slit, it was a saw. There had been a telecom knife found near one of the bodies that had been dumped years earlier. When they found the body, they found this knife. They didn't know who to connect it to. But then once they had him, they were like, this is a solid piece of evidence. We found this knife years ago before we were even on to you. Detectives managed to match his DNA to a fragment found under Sierra's fingernail. Prosecutors said that they were material fibers found on the bodies of Sierra and Jane that had also come from Bradley's clothing and car. So they take the DNA evidence on them and say their bodies were in his car at one point. Jane and Sierra's bodies were found in the same pose, but just mirrored. All this, these facts about the case come out of trial, that their bodies were found had actually been posed in the same pose, but just mirrored. So he totally was like a serial killer. So Sierra's body had been covered by leaves. Well, both of the bodies had been covered. But this one had been covered by leaves that were pulled from a tall tree that was nearby. They made that connection when they were investigating, and this was a clue for them at the time, because the tree was high, so they were like, he would have had to at least this tall to be able to reach up and pull branches. So they had like a cap of how tall their suspect had to be. Again, information that wasn't released to the public. Like, we know our suspect has to be this tall. You know, a little before the arrest of Bradley, police had randomly released video footage that they had for years of Sarah the night she went missing. So there was, and people were like, hey, where's the video footage? They never came out with it. And people were like, maybe the cameras weren't working or something. Years later, a little bit before the arrest, police randomly are like, hey, let's hold a press conference. We have this video footage of Sarah, and they release it. And this is a huge bombshell for everyone, because police know there's activity going on in the case. But everyone else is like, the case is dead. And now police finally released the video footage of Sarah. It was huge. Like, everyone is speculating. It was the biggest piece of evidence in this case, and at trial. More of this footage comes out, but that part hasn't been released to the public. So we still only have the little bit that was released before he was arrested. And this footage seems to be a big deal to a lot of the sources. But I'm guessing because a lot of the sources were before this most recent trial, so this was the biggest piece of evidence. But really, and I do get that video footage of someone minutes before they go missing forever is a big deal, so don't get me wrong. But there's nothing in this video footage that points to Bradley or points to anything that happens. I'm in no way a professional in all this, but I would assume that's probably why they didn't release all this. Because if it went to court and they found him, or I feel like there wasn't enough to convict him. So, they release it, and there's a guy that comes up in this footage. Her friends leave, remembers her friends left her, and she was going to keep hanging out. She's leaning against this pole, and in the footage, a guy walks up, and she recognizes him. She goes, hey. Like, you can't hear it, but you can see her wave. And they sit, and they have a conversation. And everyone before trial is like, oh my gosh, this guy killed her. Like, this guy. They know each other. It's a huge deal. And then I can't get the clarification on whether or not the guy was Bradley. Like, I've looked, I don't think it is, because I think people would clarify this guy that this was this huge bombshell. The footage was Bradley after they made the connection to the two. But it wasn't. No one clarifies that. So to me, it's kind of like, I see that weight this video has in this case because it's Sarah's last moments, and there's something especially eerie and just, you know, almost spiritual about seeing someone in their last moments before a tragedy happens. But at the same time, it has absolutely nothing to do with the conviction of Bradley. So we don't really know if it's Bradley because no one ever came forward and said yes or no. There was no source that specified that the man in the footage with Sarah was Bradley, and I feel like that would have been huge in the case if it had been. Despite Bradley's plea of not guilty, he comes and says, I didn't do these murders. The judge declares him guilty of Jane Rimmer and Sierra Glennon's murders. He says, although Bradley, I do believe that you did kill Sarah, there's not enough evidence to charge you with that without her body. I want to not risk you appealing on that, so I'm going to charge you with Sarah's murder. Or I'm only going to charge you with the two. And he's sentenced. And Bradley never ever released where Sarah Bodies is. So he ends up being sentenced to life in prison. And I think he does have, he can be given parole, but he'll probably be dead by then. So he still continues to say he didn't do it. Police have come forward and were like, hey, can you please tell us where Sarah's body is for her family? And he's like, I didn't do it. Her body, I don't know where her body is. It's crazy to see a case because, I mean, you see them quite a bit. All these cold cases from like the 90s, 80s, whatever it is. And they get solved years later from DNA. I mean, a huge shift in that. And it's awesome. The case was solely solved because of DNA testing. I mean, it took a lot of strains and a lot of effort and kind of testing and a lot of guessing, but you know. Excuse me. So with that, let me know your thoughts on this case in the comment section below. And give us a thumbs up if you like the video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps grow the channel, upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, be able to pay them, and of course, take the show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.